This week on the FAQ City Podcast, WFAE listener Mark Doherty wants to know, where can you find Charlotte's ties to the American Revolution? We travel through time and the Queen City on this week's FAQ City. Download the podcast and contribute your own question on WFAE.org/FAQ City. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. NASCAR's longest race of the year, the Coca-Cola 600, is just 5 days away. The green flag drops on Sunday at Charlotte Motor Speedway, and today is voting day for the next set of inductees into the NASCAR Hall of Fame. The relationship of Charlotte and stock car racing is symbiotic and long and continues today. So as fans get ready for the race, we're going to talk about the sport, where it is, where it's going, with three people who know it well. Jeff Hammond got his start in racing with Darrell Waltrip, where he was crew chief. And today, he is a Fox Sports NASCAR analyst. He's even got his shirt on to prove it. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me. I'm really excited about being here.
Well, I'm glad you're here. And also with us in our Spirit Square studios, Winston Kelly, the man with the best name in racing, the executive director of the NASCAR Hall of Fame, and the man, as I said, with the perfect name for racing. Good to see you again. Thanks for being with us.
It's great to be here, Mike, and tip of the cap to my mom. She overruled my dad when I was born.
Okay. What was it going to be?
He didn't have a vote in it, and okay. My mom said, you got to name the older brother, and I'm named after a great uncle that on my mom's side.
Okay. Well, it could have been Bush Kelly.
It's a whole lot better. Nobody ever thought about sprint because they've seen me get up and down pit road, so we'll leave it at that.
And Scott Cooper is here. Scott Cooper's taking time off from a very busy week where he is vice president of communications for the Charlotte Motor Speedway. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, it's a pleasure, Mike. Appreciate you having us in as we celebrate all that is race week here.
So this race coming up this weekend is 600 miles. NASCAR races are usually 500 miles. I hear through the grapevine that people are talking about even shorter races, which we can talk about later. But why is this one, this weekend's race, 600 miles long?
Well, that all goes back to our founder and our owner, Bruton Smith. When he built Charlotte Motor Speedway, he wanted to do something different. Mm-hmm. He knew he had to compete at that time for the time of the race with the Indy 500. So he wanted to do something bigger and longer that would feel bigger and longer than the Indy 500. And he likes to do things first. So the World 600 at that time was actually the first NASCAR stock car race that was a 600-mile event. So he created it then, and when he built the track in 1959, we ran our first one in 1960. And now we're on our 59th running this weekend, looking ahead to Sunday.
It's probably not a big deal anymore, but as I understand it, as we go through this conversation, you will know how little I know about all this. But as I understand it, back in the day, part of the challenge was to see if these cars could go 500 miles at those speeds. So putting an additional 100 miles on it was a big deal. What does that extra 100 miles do today, either for the driver or to the cars or to the race crew, the pit crew, or for the fans? What does it do?
Well, I mean, I have maybe a little bit of advantage on these folks that are sitting here with me today. I'm born and raised here in Charlotte. My first race was 1964. Wow. When I was 8 years old, my dad took me over there, and I got an opportunity to see a 600-mile race. And, you know, having gone through all everything and watching everything evolve at Charlotte, the 600 miles, and now, you know, being a former crew chief, back in the day, the engines, the components, I'm talking about valve springs and rocker arms, they were very susceptible to failure. Mm-hmm. Today, everybody and all the parts and pieces are so much better, but we still have the same issues because they're going faster. We demand more. Instead of pacing it back in the day, they would pretty much say, okay, I want you to run a 32-second lap, for an example. Well, today, they're running a 30-second lap. So they're hammering these parts, these components, wheel bearings, everything, tires. That's the big challenge today is what's the limit on something like this? And when it comes to the man behind the wheel, the focus. We have the longest sporting event there is.
Wow.
You know, average race is like 4 hours and 15 or 20 minutes. Now, yeah, they have run some faster ones, but at the same time, they've also run some longer ones. So that focus a driver's got to have, the team's got to have, all the adjustments that go into each time the car comes down pit road, all these factors come into play here at Charlotte. And that's what sets this particular race apart from any other race. Believe it or not, an extra 100 miles, well, that's no big deal. It is a big deal. It always has been a big deal. And I don't expect it to be any different this weekend.
Is the fatigue for the driver, whether it's 500 or 600 miles, is the fatigue for the driver physical or is it mental?
Combination of both. I mean, it's easy for them to lose focus. Next thing you know, you're running so close to the wall, you hit the wall. So it is a physical deal, too, because you're in there, you're working. You got to realize, once they get running in the first 30 minutes or so, and Winston, you know what I'm talking about. You've been on pit road. You've seen these guys over 120-degree cockpit temperature and can go higher,
right.
And that can play a part.
Yeah, I was listening to Kevin Harvick's radio show last night, and he was talking about that extra 100 miles, and he hydrates himself differently going into this race. And you mentioned the discussion about changing the lengths of the race. One of the things that you always hear people say when they speculate on that, they say there's certain races that should not change. The Daytona 500 and the Coca-Cola 600 is one of those. This has stood the test of time, and I was actually at that race. Second race I ever went to was the 64 World 600. My dad was the original public relations director out there working with Bruton Smith, so I remember that very well. But it has stood.
I stand corrected.
The test
you were there.
Of time. Yeah, we're both old. But, you know, it stood the test of time.
Yeah.
But I think another thing is technology in life has gone so far, and that's what's happened with the cars. And something Jeff can speak to a whole lot better than me, having been a pit crew member and now working with pit crews. This is an endurance test and a physical test for the pit crews because they're going to make more pit stops this Sunday night than they will any time throughout the year, probably 10 to a dozen pit stops. So it's going to be very grueling on the pit crews.
Would it be fair to say that the driver is a marathon runner and the pit crews are sprint runners because they whatever they do, they have to do it very quickly and focused, and they're done?
I think that's a great analogy. I really do, because you're exactly right. The driver gets in there. He knows he's got to go the distance. He's got a lot of stations he's got to run to. But those the pit crew members, when it comes down pit road, is get it done. We're talking about, you know, in less than 15 seconds, all this stuff, and don't make a mistake. And that perfection is part of the issue that we run into today, is that these guys are good, but the one who makes the mistake is usually the one who winds up losing the most. You know, so a lot of times I'm talking about, you know, missing lug nuts, loose wheels, I mean, getting over the pit wall too quick. All these variables that come into play in the most critical part, because too many races are won or lost off pit road.
Scott. Mike, this is also a race that is very unique in that it starts in the late afternoon, hot sun at the speedway, and then it ends at night. And that's a challenge. That's a challenge for the teams. It's a challenge for guys like Jeff when they were crew chiefing to figure out how to keep the car in tune for where it needed to be, not just to start the race, but where was it going to be for that last 100
laps. Because the temperature changes,
yes.
Right?
And, you know, you were talking about the physical wear on these guys. I can actually remember choreographing a victory lane one night when Mark Martin had actually won the race. And Mark, as these guys will attest, was one of the fittest guys in the garage, and still is. And I remember after he won that race, after 600 miles, the photographers all wanted him to raise the trophy above his head for a big trophy shot, and he asked me to help him. I literally had to help him hoist it, and I was propping up his elbow out of the picture.
Right.
To be able to help him hold it up because he was just so physically exhausted at the end of the race. So it's truly a test of endurance.
There's also a comparison, I think, to baseball here, is there not? Because every baseball stadium is different and changes the game a little bit. All these speedways are different. Talk to me, the two of you, and all three of you can talk about this, I guess. What is the difference between the Charlotte Motor Speedway and the Daytona Speedway or some of the other speedways? What challenges, what differences do drivers have to take into consideration?
Well, when you talk about Daytona, you're talking about what in our world we call a super speedway. It's a 2.5 mile racetrack. Charlotte is a 1.5 mile racetrack. The bankings are greater at Daytona, less at Charlotte. Transitions into the corner, the radius of the corner, the dog leg that they have down the front straightaway. All of these are variables that we run into at every racetrack we go to. That's the characteristic we always talk about. Well, we got too many 1.5 mile racetrack. Every 1.5 mile racetrack is different from its cousin. Mm. I mean, they're not even good brothers and sisters. I call them cousins because those challenges you run into at Charlotte You won't experience at Texas. You won't experience them at Atlanta. It will be unique unto themselves. And when that happens, that's the reason why 1 week a guy will win and look so good at a racetrack, and next week he shows up and they miss the sit-up.
Do drivers have favorite racetrack?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. If a race car driver doesn't have one or two favorites, then he's in the wrong business. And what you want as a crew chief, and I think you guys can agree with this, you want the driver to love all of them. You want them to say, hey, I can't wait to get there because I'm good there. Almost like, you know, Jimmy Johnson, when you look at his record at so many racetracks where he's won not just one race. Oh, I've won 7. I've won 11. I've won 8. How do you pick which one's your favorite? All of them are his favorite.
Your question is actually one of the exhibits in the NASCAR Hall of Fame that it shows. It's called Glory Road, and it tells a car story, the different cars that have been around NASCAR, but all the tracks that we currently race on and many of the historic tracks, and we use that same analysis. Every football field, basketball court's the same size. All of our tracks are different, and we explain the banking, the 24 degrees at Charlotte. But the drivers will even tell you ones that look similar, like the Atlanta Motor Speedway and Texas Motor Speedway. They will tell you they behave very differently. Charlotte is known as being one of the more temperamental tracks as it relates to weather and sun, and where the condominiums are, another Bruton Smith first, when that sun goes down, you've got shade in turn right. 1 and 2 and sun in turn 3 and 4, and that's a heck of a challenge for the crew chief that has to make adjustments to the car.
And
where
the
do
driver,
you compromise?
Right?
Absolutely.
You got to see. Thanks to you, Winston Kelly. We were at the opening day. We did this program at the opening day of the NASCAR Hall of Fame several years ago, and I've been back several times since and have brought friends who've been visiting in town because, you know, it's one of the things you do, right?
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And people who are not race fans who have asked me, should we go there? And unequivocally, I say yes, because you really do get an appreciation just by walking through it for what this thing is all about. Even if you've never been to a race, never will go to a race, you get it. You get it. There's more to it than racing.
That one of the things we feel the best about, we survey every guest that comes through and get back tens of thousands a year. And one of the most common comments in the verbatims for those who aren't race fans, they say, I came with somebody who was a race fan, or I came because I was in town. And I learned so much. I realized there's so much more to NASCAR, the sport, NASCAR, the business, and what a good time that they had. And what we tried to do, and great work from the exhibit designers, they're the ones that realized how different our fields are because they looked at it from the outside. And we wanted something for those diehard fans, people like Jeff and myself, that we could go through there and either relive things or learn things we didn't know, but also be able to talk to people who had never been around the sport to be able to understand it and engage with it. So it's good to hear, and that's what our guests tell us, that it gives them that perspective regardless of their background or interest in NASCAR.
We used to say, Scott, that on race weekends, Charlotte Motor Speedway becomes, I think, the second or third largest city in the Carolinas. Is that still the case?
I don't know if that's still the case. There's been a lot of population growth, but what I do know is that this weekend we've got fans from all 50 states and 23 foreign countries that are coming to the events at Charlotte Motor Speedway. We'll have the broadcast of Sunday's race. We'll be broadcast on radio and telecast on television to more than 175 countries worldwide. I don't know that there's a spotlight any other time of the year on Charlotte and the Charlotte region that is that great and that international. And we're blessed to be able to do this on an annual basis. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what's really special about the Speedway and everything that Charlotte has to offer when it comes to NASCAR. What we're going through right now in these 10 days from the All-Star race last week through the 600 is really a celebration of the first major professional sport, which was NASCAR stock car racing for Charlotte and the state of North Carolina. So it's all about having some fun.
Scott Cooper is Executive Vice President for Communications at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Winston Kelly is here from the NASCAR Hall of Fame. And Jeff Hammond from Fox Sports. We're going to come right back in a moment.
On May 31st, WFAE will launch a new investigative podcast called She Says, about one sexual assault survivor's search for justice and healing. Hear a preview now on WFAE.org/She Says.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking racing this morning with three guys who know NASCAR better than probably anybody else on this block.
In I'm this glad room. You got that tight enough.
I feel good now.
Yeah.
Jeff Hammond.
I'm afraid it's going to go out there a little bit.
Jeff Hammond is here. He's a NASCAR analyst for Fox Sports. Winston Kelly is the executive director of the NASCAR Hall of Fame. Scott Cooper is vice president of communications for Charlotte Motor Speedway. What are these two race weeks in Charlotte, the May and the October weeks, what do they do for the NASCAR Hall of Fame? What does that do for attendance, the people that come there? Do people who go and park on the infield for the weekend venture downtown and into that museum?
Absolutely. These are two of our biggest weekends of the year. We also have some very good weekends around our induction ceremony. If these guys have a car show and a little bit of bad weather like they did a few weeks ago, that helps us too. We don't wish that on them. But these 10 days, these 14 days are some of our busiest of the year from a lot of perspectives. The fact that people get to – we're the only Hall of Fame that the vote – and the announcement mm-hmm. happens on the same day at the location that the inductees will be enshrined and that fans can come. So that's a big deal for us. Tying in with Speed Street is a big deal. The partnership that we have throughout the industry, but especially with Charlotte Motor Speedway, is tremendous. So these are 2 weeks that are very important to us, and our members, our fans really love it, and they like being able to do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
That's a large part of the reason why NASCAR chose having the Hall of Fame here in Charlotte, with the majority of the race teams being here, the Speedway being here, the industry being here.
How do you keep it fresh?
We change things out all the time, all throughout the year. We've actually got 3 new exhibits just in the past couple of weeks. We put in a new half and half car with our partners at Toyota that's half race car, half stock car, as if it just rolled off the assembly line from Toyota or just rolled out of one of the race teams out of Joe Gibbs Racing. We also just added Matt Kenseth, what we were going to say, last win car. Now it's the most recent win with Joe Gibbs Racing since he's come back. And we're just installed, and we're finalizing that this morning, an exhibit about Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s career. We have the actual car he raced in the last race at Miami Homestead, a great video he did this last year summarizing and reflecting on his career, a lot of the images from all of his Premier Series wins, as well as many of his Busch wins and championships. And we've got about 22 of his uniforms and, excuse me, half a dozen trophies. So we're always changing things out. Our Great Hall exhibit that is currently Cars 3 will be in through the end of June. Then we're going to put an exhibit called 1948 to focus on the first year of NASCAR, which was 70 years ago. So we're always changing things out throughout the year.
Back in the beginning, as you will learn if you go to the NASCAR Hall of Fame, these early races were amateur races, pretty much, with guys who were testing their mettle against other drivers and testing their mechanical abilities against other drivers because they were souped-up cars. That's why they're called stock cars. You buy them at a dealership, you soup them up, you race them. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these guys were moonshine runners. Today, it's highly mechanical. I mean, it's technological. They're technological marvels, and it requires really experienced mechanics who are kind of inventing things on the fly in some cases in the pit crews. Has anything changed from the point of view of the fan? Are they still looking for the same thing? Are they still looking for the guy who's going to win the race, who's going to take chances, who's going to go around other cars, who maybe has more wrecks than the other guy, who gets into fights with the other? What are they looking for?
I think that is the one thing that really has not changed with the sport. I think that the fan still comes to the racetrack. They want to have a good time, but they want to see a great show on the track. They want to see a daredevil. You know, the late
and there have been some complaints about NASCAR not having a lot of daredevils anymore. That's a friend of mine is a big racing fan, and she likes to watch the truck races because they're more
reckless.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Well, I hope that your friend had an opportunity to watch the All-Star race on Saturday night.
Okay.
We had a great collaboration with NASCAR and the teams to run a special rules package that was designed to mix things up some.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a phenomenal race on Saturday night. We had so much passing. The guys were bunched together. It was a real challenge for the drivers. And Kevin Harvick, who's really been the best driver of the year so far, you know, the cream still rose to the top. He did great, ended up winning the race and taking home the $1 million. But the race was really what a lot of fans had been clamoring for. And I think as we look ahead to the future, we may be looking back at this All-Star race and seeing that this is a rules package that NASCAR is going to put into play with the race teams in the not too distant future, we hope, that's going to continue that great show, and it's going to make something phenomenal for fans to be able to enjoy.
I guess this was prior to the Great Recession. NASCAR was spreading all over the country into places that you never thought NASCAR would be, and the interest was rising among people who had never seen a race before or never seen a race in person before because racetracks were popping up and it was on national television, et cetera, et cetera. We've heard recently that that NASCAR, like the NFL, is facing declining TV ratings and even a slump in attendance at the tracks. And Dave Caldwell wrote an article from Forbes magazine headlined, NASCAR wobbles into 2018 low on gas and badly needing a spark. And he says, whether NASCAR wants to admit it or not, general interest in its stale and overpriced product can be measured in television ratings and empty seats, and both metrics were pretty lousy in 2017. An optimist, he said, would say there is nowhere to go but up. Just try to find an optimist. What's your reaction to that stark brand of pessimism?
I'm an optimist.
I think you've got three of them right
That's
here.
That's right.
Yeah, and I don't know this gentleman, so I can't react to him, but I think one of the things that everybody that is seeking the discretionary dollar from somebody, the competition is there so much greater than it's ever been before. It doesn't matter whether it's a movie theater or a sporting event. There's so many other things that people are doing. There's so many other outlets for people to go to.
And is that why you think TV ratings and attendance maybe?
I think
down in the NFL.
I think that's one of the reasons. With everything, I think, you know, you think about what you do and what I do on the radio. There's so many more options. You know, when I was growing up, when we got the fourth channel to be able to watch on TV, we had increased by 33%. That was a big deal.
Yeah.
And you know,
and
you,
people were too lazy to get up, walk across the room, and change the channel. So you
exactly
if you, you got know, them, you got them.
There are more things for people to do than listen to MRN radio, than watch Fox and WFAE. And I think that's one of the things that we're all challenged with no matter what we do. And I think as things move forward, Bill France Jr. has a quote in his exhibit in the NASCAR Hall of Fame that said, if you're not moving forward, you're moving backwards. Mm-hmm. And to Scott's point, I applaud NASCAR for the things that they're doing, because while I think the fans do want the same things in terms of competition, they also want additional things in the entertainment experience. They want social media. That's where the stage racing that has been so successful, breaking it up into segments. You know, before stage racing, what happened in the first half of the race, if you stayed on the lead lap, might not happen, might not matter. It matters if you score points in the first half of a football game. So I think NASCAR is continuing to see things that can improve the sport.
And I know you don't agree with the stale analogy. I don't know what would make it any more stale than a basketball game or a football game, because you're playing by rules, and the games have to be played by those rules. So and there are rules in NASCAR which seem to change more often than the rules in football or baseball. But you've also done innovative things on the TV broadcast. I'll never forget when I first got my surround system. I just happened to be flipping through the channels, and there was a NASCAR race on, mm-hmm. and they said, they stopped
crank
talking.
It up.
Crank it up.
Yep.
I did.
Fox did that. Yep.
I did.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the greatest things, because it brings it right into your living
right.
room.
And the fact that you can hear the pit crews talking.
Exactly. You can hear everything that's going on, and we can go down. How many sporting events can you watch? Watch, mind you. Now, you can listen to it on radio if they happen to go that direction, because they're doing it also. But all of a sudden, the guy comes out halfway through the race, and they call him up after a caution and say, hey, what's it looking like up front? How's your car today? I mean, you're getting an update
in
the middle of the game. I mean, we always think it's great when they go to halftime and the coach comes by and gives you a 30-second soundbite. We're talking to the quarterback.
Right.
Not talking to the coach.
And you're not talking – it's not a reporter talking to the quarterback
no.
where he's going to give you the same old, well, we played good, but the other guys were good too. This is the professionals talking amongst each other.
Exactly. You got people that up in the booth that they're respectful, whether it's Darrell Waltrip, Jeff Gordon, you know, that are talking to Kevin Harvick, that are talking to Clint Bowyer or Joey Logano. And who knows, you may ask a guy a question – and he may be having a bad day all of a sudden. He may have had something didn't go quite right, and you may get a sound bite that you weren't expecting.
Yeah. And you have the same thing during the race with the crew chiefs. You don't see somebody walk up to Ron Rivera during the middle of a football game and say, "What's going on?"
Right.
It doesn't happen. Yeah. I think the camera angles these guys have, you don't have a camera on Cam Newton's helmet like you have on Kurt Busch's helmet. You don't have a camera looking out the back like you do.
Yeah,
you
don't get to hear the conversations between the coach and the players that may be happening on the sideline.
Or when they crash instantaneously, we're rolling any kind of radio chat. Are you all right?
Yeah,
I'm okay. Or no, I mean, go back to Eric Amarola when he got hurt at Kansas. And, I mean, the radio chatter there, I mean, it was almost like, you know, you kind of like, for me as a former crew chief, I mean, I held my breath because I could tell this guy, he's hurt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's hurt. I mean, and I've called drivers on the radio, are you okay? And you get no response. So you're involved, you know, at the same moment that we are.
Right.
If you're a fan and you're watching, you're involved. You're in this game. You're not just watching this game. You're in this race right along with everybody
else. And you get to talk to them immediately when they come out of the care center if it's an accident.
Exactly.
And that's been that way for a long, long time. You don't talk to the losers in other sports right after the game.
Right.
You don't talk to them at all unless it's after the Super Bowl, and some of them don't come out of the locker room. But we got 39 losers every weekend and one winner, and we talk to the losers, whether it's the second-place finisher or somebody who has an accident, immediate. So that accessibility has always been there and continues to grow.
And the other thing is, too, you know, our sport's going through, any sport's going through this. You can DVR a program, and it doesn't show up on your ratings. You got, like, Fox, you know, Fox Sports Go, you can watch it on your phone. So there's so many avenues that are not totally traceable accurately like it has been in the past, too. So you don't know how many fans you've got out there that are not showing up on a chartable deal. Now, people say, okay, people in the grandstand, this, that, and the other. No, any sport, every sport, you've already touched about it, has been hurting. But also, when you look at society, I heard something in the news the other day. I mean, people aren't having babies like you were in the past. There's a decline there. So how do you justify that? I mean, what's going on there?
The world is
changing.
That's the next hour, as a matter of fact. That's the next hour.
We should stick around. Maybe we'll learn something.
I might learn something, yeah.
Rules changes. NASCAR does do rules changes, and people don't like change sometimes. But on the other hand, you want to make the fans have something fresh to see. So how do you balance the two? How does NASCAR balance?
It's not a matter of balancing for the fans. It's more trying to keep control of some really smart technology that these teams possess. You know, you were talking about the sport and how it's evolved. It was created by innovators, you know, like Smokey Unick and Junior Johnson, Leonard Wood. These guys, they were innovators. They are the ones who brought our sport to where it is today, and the other ones like Doug Yates and Robert Yates, they have pushed it to the next level. And when I say that, we had 428 cubic inch engines in the very beginning. We're now running 355-inch engines and making more speed than ever before. We've got the engines restricted down. We've done this, that, and the other to try to slow the cars down, but yet they go faster and faster. Technology is carrying our sport at a very high rate. And because of that, NASCAR has to put the clamps on these guys because we're talking about, 25 thousandths maybe picking you up a mile an hour. So, you know, in the right area. So NASCAR has to put the clamps on these guys, and every now and then they'll find something that they have overlooked because the teams found it, and they have to make a rule to try to prevent it. They were getting so fast on these pit crews, they said, well, we need to slow it down. We need to try to save the team some money. They took a man away. And it's been effective. But guess what? They've rallied back, and they got more speed back than their pit crews, and they're almost halfway back to where they were with six guys with five. This is the type of industry that we work in and we play in. It's always a cutting edge and looking for what do we need to do next to get better.
Well, I think the technology that the crews have implemented, there used to be a lot more accidents during the race, but the crews have gotten the car so they're so stable and the drivers are so good that's one of the things that we're a victim maybe of our own success and that technological advancement, which is what some people see as excitement having accidents, and we don't have as many of those because people have gotten better at their job.
So you're telling me that the drivers today are better than some of the legendary drivers that may already be part of the
Hall of Fame? I'm not saying that. I'm saying that the cars are more stable than they were in the past, and the drivers hone their skills throughout a long period of time. I'm like Richard Petty. You can't compare Richard Petty's era to Jeff Gordon's era to Kevin Harvick's era any more than you can compare Hank Aaron.
What do you think would happen if you took a Richard Petty in his prime and stuck him in one of today's cars?
I think good drivers will be able to race good cars. I think Jeff Gordon could have raced with David Pearson, and David Pearson could race with Jeff Gordon. No question in my mind.
Okay. Well, despite the predictions of doom and gloom that we brought up a moment ago, Humpy Wheeler, who used to be the CEO of Speedway Motorsports at the Charlotte Motor Speedway, who has a longtime connection to racing, goes way back to the dirt tracks, he sees the sport, quote, on the precipice of international opportunity. He believes NASCAR has to become an international brand. NFL thinks the same thing. Is that where you're headed? Are we going to see NASCAR races in London, in Paris, and in Tokyo?
I think that's a great possibility. I think you're already seeing one of the young guns in the sport right now making a big splash in Daniel Suarez, who actually won the championship in the Xfinity Series, which is, you know, some might call it the ladder series,
AAA.
Stepping up to Cup. It'd be like AAA in baseball. Mexican-born. And I think, you know, that is a growth opportunity. It's another place for the sport to continue to evolve. And I think that's what we're in the midst of right now. We're in the midst of an evolutionary period for the sport.
Well, we already have a European series right now that's currently being raced over in Europe, like I say, with Spain, and I think, you know, with some tracks probably, I think, are also in France. But Bobby Labonte currently, I think he's making 6 trips over this year to run in that series, you know, a former, you know, Cup champion. And yeah, so
there's a NASCAR Euro Series, a Canadian Series, and a Mexican Series, and they all do their banquets or the banquet together at the Hall of Fame every year. And NASCAR just added an international group to your point and to Humpy's point. So they do see that growth opportunity. How and where it grows, there are people smarter than me.
Right.
But I think he's right, and I think NASCAR sees that, and that's why they set up this international group.
Well, they seem to have this fixation on Formula One racing and Le Mans-style racing in Europe. They don't have the relationship in their daily lives to automobiles that Americans have traditionally had. Can they relate to Chevys and Fords and Chryslers, or are you going to have to bring in the Mercedes and the BMWs and the Audis of the world?
I've been over and covered a world rally race, and I mean, you got Citroens and Hyundai over there. I mean, they're all about fast. I mean, they're all about going speed. I mean, that's the thing, is I think that's something that's international.
Okay.
Just speed.
Jeff Hammond is NASCAR analyst for Fox Sports. He's here with Winston Kelly from the Hall of Fame and Scott Cooper from the Speedway. We're coming right back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking racing in advance of the Coca-Cola 600 this weekend at the Charlotte Motor Speedway. And, of course, today is the day that they will announce they'll vote on. Will you announce them today, the inductees into the 2019 class?
Yes, sir. This afternoon, 5:30, NBC, SN, and Sirius XM will carry it live. And anybody that's at the Hall of Fame, we're the only Hall of Fame that the fans can actually be there when the vote is announced.
Who votes?
There's 60 people. It's on our website, NASCARHall.com, but it's a combination of people who've been in the industry for a long time predominantly. You've got people from the sanctioning body, people from Speedway Motorsports, Scott's boss, Marcus Smith, one of those, people from International Speedway Corporation, retired car owners, drivers, you know, people like Richard Petty, Junior Johnson, Ricky Rudd, and folks like that who have been around a long, long time. Eddie Wood, each of the manufacturers, Edsel Ford being among those who's on the the voting panel. And then about a dozen of the media folks who've been around, most of them a long, long time. One of Jeff's colleagues, Mike Joy, who knows as much as anybody about all forms of NASCAR. And it's just a friendly discussion and spirited discussion and debate.
Perhaps you read the newspaper this morning. I'm sure you did. They're making predictions about a unanimous vote for Jeff Gordon and advocating for, practically they are definitely advocating for it in the paper. What do you think? Give us a prediction. Go ahead, Winston.
I'm not going to make a prediction. I think he should be unanimous.
I will.
Yeah, he'll get in. Now I'll make that prediction.
Yeah, getting ready. Yeah. Don't miss in. That opportunity.
I'll make the prediction. He'll get in and four others. That I'll take to the bank.
Yeah.
Which four others I think is a toss up. Will he be unanimous? I think he should. But I think there are three others that should have been unanimous. Bill France Sr. should have been unanimous the first year. Why he wasn't is a head-scratcher. Richard Petty should have been unanimous. He was lobbying against himself for his father, so he may not have helped himself in that regard. And in the second year, David Pearson, who had not gone in the first year, second winningest driver, none of those have been unanimous. I think Jeff Gordon, you look – third winningest driver in the 70 years of NASCAR history, four championships at the top level, and third by not by a long margin with 93 wins, and was a transformational figure in the sport. People looked at the sport different. Owners looked at it different. He should be unanimous. Whether he will, that's what I'm not going to predict.
Scott. And the first of those 93 wins, the Coca-Cola 600 in 1993 at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
How much of a role, if any, does fan popularity play in who is voted in?
We are the only Hall of Fame that has a fan vote that actually counts. That's actually the 60th vote. Fans could go online up until Monday to NASCAR.com and NASCARHall.com. The top five vote getters, that counts as one vote. So you can't have a fan group that stuffs the ballot, if you will. So the popularity of somebody, I think, in the room can be a tiebreaker. Bill Elliott, 16 most popular drivers, I think that helped him get voted in over Terry Labonte the first year they were both eligible. So, well, I think it does matter. I think Davey Allison's popularity can play a point. It's not the reason, but it's a reason. But the fans actually have a voice in our Hall of Fame that no other Hall of Fame has.
If you're up for induction and you don't get voted in, do you have another shot at it next year or the year after?
You're not automatically carried over. When the nomination process happens in February, you're not automatically carried over. However, those 15 who have not been nominated in previous years, nobody has fallen off of the ballot, except for the year that we went from 25 nominees to 20. So by math, you're going to have that happen. But since we've gone to 20 nominees, nobody has fallen off.
So you'll be announcing at 5:30 today.
5:30 this afternoon. Either Brian France or Mike Helton on behalf of NASCAR will make that announcement.
And they get inducted. This is the 2019 class. So when will the induction be?
February the 1st of 2019 will be the induction ceremony for the class of 2019.
Okay. We had a question, and I'm going to go back in time a little bit. We had a question from a listener wanting to know about rule changes in NASCAR and whether you guys think that it's a good thing or a bad thing for the sport.
Well, it depends on what we're addressing when it comes to a rule change. Sometimes these rule changes address safety. Other times they do address competitive advantages. And when it comes to safety, I'll never argue a rule that promotes safety, because that's one thing that since we lost Dale Earnhardt Sr., we've made huge strides in our industry that has basically also trickled out into all forms of racing. And I think a lot more race car drivers around the world are safer because they looked at NASCAR and what we did as far as the sport to promote safety. Some of the competitive deals that I'm talking about that they may be addressing, some of them I don't like because I'm an innovator. I mean, I've always been a guy that worked for an innovator in Junior Johnson, that developing ideas and pushing the envelope was part of what our sport is. I would like to see us be able to get back to more of that, but also I understand the need, because some teams have engineers that, I mean, NASA and people like that would love to have, because those guys are so smart. I mean, they can look at something and they can make it run backwards and run faster.
Since we have a pit crew chief here, a former pit crew chief here, talk to me about this. Bubba Wallace changed evidently this year from Ford to Chevy, and that caused some problems in there. And I'm just curious as to why, because these are not cars that you're walking over to Hendrick BMW or Hendrick Chevrolet to buy. These are stock cars that are really... The body style resembles what you'd get off the floor, but the engine and everything else is completely different. So when you change from Chevy to to Chrysler or Chrysler to Ford or vice versa. Why does that make a difference? Aren't you completely building the cars anyway?
You are, but the big difference there is the way the manufacturer has submitted their particular brand to NASCAR. It has some characteristics that are built into it that create problems. In our industry right now, we deal very a lot on aero balance. Our cars are very sensitive to the way the car sees air and uses the air to make the car stable. In the case of the Chevrolet this year, the Chevrolet Camaro they're running currently, is has given them a challenge. They have not quite got the aero platform, we like to use that term, of how it keeps the front tires and the rear tires working together. Mm-hmm. Currently, I think the Ford is the best balanced race car out there, and when they get the right chassis combination to go with their aero platform, Kevin Harvick and a lot of the Fords have been hard to handle so far this year.
Anecdotally, I've always heard that if a Ford wins the Coca-Cola 600, people will go out tomorrow morning or Tuesday morning and buy a Ford.
Well, what wins on Sunday sells on Monday.
Exactly right. So if you're doing that because the Ford has the better aerodynamics, as you just said, are you going to get that aerodynamics and therefore gasoline savings and more controllability in the car you buy off the showroom floor?
Well, you'd be surprised how much information that all these manufacturers are in racing for a reason. They try to translate that.
It's a testing ground.
It really is. I mean, you get people right now that are excited that Ford next year is going away from their current brand and bringing in the Mustang mm-hmm. to basically go head-to-head with the Camaro. You know, a Camry was never what you call a sexy car until Toyota got hold of it, and they sporterized it, I guess you call it, and gave it a racy look. Mm-hmm. And now Toyota, is our best-selling car on the street. So there's a reason behind being involved in racing.
And, Mike, that's actually another storyline to watch looking ahead to Sunday. Ford has not won a Coca-Cola 600 as a manufacturer since 2004.
That was Mark Martin.
It was Mark Martin. So it's been a long time since Ford has been in victory lane at Charlotte Motor Speedway, mm-hmm. but they have clearly been the dominant manufacturer and make on the track this year so far. Toyota kind of a close second. So that'll be something else to watch looking ahead to Sunday.
There's another phenomenon going on around the country that maybe concerns you, maybe it doesn't, or maybe you'll be able to reverse it simply because of who you are and what you do, and that is the fact that we seem to be falling out of love with cars. We've always been in love with cars in this country. But millennials today, some of them they have no interest in owning a car, no interest in driving a car. I'm just curious, and we're moving toward a world where self-driving cars are becoming a reality. They're going through some glitchy times right now, but it's going to happen. So when that happens, are you not putting a barrier between a human and this device that you used to control and drive and you bought it because it did something for your soul? And if that happens, what does that do to racing?
I think the facts are the facts, and what you said is accurate. You know, we counted down the days from we were 11 or 12 to where we got our license.
Exactly right.
But I think that's one of the things that NASCAR and the tracks have done where I think it's kids under 12 can get in free.
Kids under 13
can get into Charlotte. The Xfinity and truck races mm-hmm. at every single racetrack. We've got 27 modules in our education program, and a lot of that is to teach, to give that hands-on authentic experience to teachers to teach things to national and state standards, but to give them that exposure to NASCAR and see that it's an exciting sport. So I think we're all trying to do things to make that connection and overcome that, because that's a legitimate challenge. That's where society or the U.S. society is changing, and we're doing things to try to bridge that gap. Those are just two of the examples.
When you talk about kids and millennials and everything, one of the things that I want to throw out here real quick, I don't want to make sure I don't say this. This weekend, this Memorial Day weekend, is such a huge motorsports day. You got Monaco, you got the Coca-Cola 600, you got Indianapolis. But it's all happening because of the men and women who sacrificed their lives for this country to give us the freedoms to do the stuff we're doing. The cool thing about Charlotte Motor Speedway has always been about their pre-race show, and this year it's going to be, like in years past, it's going to be dedicated pretty much to the men and women of the military. And, I mean, if you're coming out or thinking about coming out there, you need to come see this pre-race show. It's going to be incredible. We got people coming from Fort Bragg. We're going to have Black Hawk helicopters are going to be there. F-15 fighters, Seymour Johnson, and having been at Fort Bragg just a few weeks ago, getting things prepped up down there and working with those folks and Charlotte Motor Speedway, they're as excited about coming to Charlotte and showing out in front of the fans, I think, as the fans are about having them here. So if you've never witnessed one of the pre-race shows, especially this military extravaganza that's going to be happening this weekend, that's worth the price of admission just to come see that.
Okay.
Mike, we're going to have 600 troops representing all five branches of the U.S. Armed Forces that will be marching across our front stretch, in addition to some of the stuff that Jeff already mentioned. And we really had the opportunity to do something unique this past month or so. We actually took several of NASCAR's top drivers and went and visited regional military bases in Virginia and North Carolina. And, you know, to see the looks on the faces of our servicemen and women when they got a chance to basically show and allow that NASCAR driver to step into their shoes and do a little bit on what they do on an annual basis was really something special for them. So we do take a lot of pride in that with the Coca-Cola 600. It's our chance to basically to say thank you, not only to remember those that have lost their lives on Memorial Day weekend, but also to say thank you to all the active duty servicemen and women that are out there. So we're excited about that, looking ahead to Sunday.
Every sport changes over time. Every sport loses their popular athletes over time because they retire or they go on to different jobs. And last year, Dale Earnhardt Jr. left the sport as a driver. This year, I think, what was it, Danica Patrick, Matt Kenseth, and somebody else. I've lost their name now. Have left the sport. Is that going to what does that do? Because Danica Patrick was the only woman driver, right?
Yep.
What does that do? What did her presence in the sport do for the sport? And is there a Danica Patrick too?
Well, I think that there is definitely a Danica Patrick too that's out there that's waiting in the wings. We're going to have an opportunity on Thursday night. We're going to run an ARCA series race with qualifying. Natalie Decker is an up-and-coming racer who's actually here with a local Charlotte team with Venturini Motorsports. You know, she may be one to watch. Where is she going to be in 3 to 5 to 6 years? I think the sport is in this great spot right now that, yes, have we lost some star power of late? Yes, we have. We've lost some great drivers. But at the same time, we have probably the most talented group of young drivers that are coming up through the ranks than we have seen in a generation or two.
And you're pushing that. You have this program called NASCAR Next.
Yes,
right?
And there's such a great storyline to follow in the Cup Series this year because the veterans, the Kevin Harvicks and the Kyle Busches and the Kurt Busches of the world, they're not ready to give up the mantle yet. And you've got Chase Elliott and Bubba Wallace and Ryan Blaney, and these guys are knocking on the door. Oh. And I think, you know, when we look ahead to Sunday's race, we've got a great history with the 600 of first-time winners. From David Pearson to Jeff Gordon to Bobby Labonte, I would love to see one of these young guys be the one that we're hosting the trophy with in Victory Lane.
Well, I've looked at this history just a little bit over the past several years, and this transition is not new.
No.
There were the
no.
Buck Bakers and the Tim Flocks from back in their era. There was the Richard Petties, the David Pearsons, then the Cale Yarboroughs, Darrell Waltrips, and then you had Dale Earnhardt, and now you've got these guys. The difference is there's more attention to it because there's more communication about it, the social media, et cetera. This is not new. This is just the next iteration of that, and the William Byrons and Chase Elliotts are going to fill that void.
Kyle Busch is never afraid to talk.
Newsflash. Yeah.
Surprise, surprise.
Has called this focus on young drivers bothersome and stupid.
Yeah, well, Kyle.
And that doesn't surprise me, and that's the way it should be, because the secret to the success of any race car driver, I don't care who it is, I watch it all the time. Darrell Waltrip and Jeff Gordon go at it every day. They're together.
And isn't that part of the fan base wants this rivalry
exactly.
between drivers, between
yeah.
young and old, between whatever and whatever,
it
right?
It doesn't matter. I mean, and I think it's great. I mean, I think the fact that Kevin Harvick and Kyle Busch have thrown down the gauntlet and say, guys, we're 40 years old. You know, almost 40 years with Kyle, but Kevin's 42. Come get it if you want it. If you can come take it from me,
yeah.
so be it. That is what this thing is all about.
That's no different than Cale Yarborough calling Darrell Waltrip Jaws
you
because he was the young up-and-coming guy nipping at his heels. got the same
or
thing
Richard
out.
Or Richard Petty with
great.
His finger stuck in Darrell Walker's chest saying,
day,
you don't know what you're doing,
it's
boy.
All about fun.
It's
and
racing.
You know what? The fact
fun.
That it's fun and then we get to talk about this and we get to do it here is special.
Scott Cooper from Charlotte Motor Speedway, Winston Kelly from the NASCAR Hall of Fame, Jeff Hammond from Fox Sports. Thank you all.